Now, according to Pew Research, over the last 2 years, people on both sides of the political aisle have reported higher levels of stress when discussing politics with people they don't agree with.
It's especially true among Democrats, though Republicans reported a slight uptick in levels of stress as well.
And while political disagreements are nothing new, increasing polarization has made these conversations feel particularly fraught and, for some, insurmountable.
In a minute, we'll chat with the author of the book Talking Across the Divide about how we can reach across divisions to find common ground, and that these conversations, while perhaps not easy, are both possible and necessary.
But first, a student group at the University of Wisconsin-Madison is trying to bring students of all political stripes together in order to foster dialogue on campus. Anna Berry is the president of the Political Science Student Association. Anna, thanks for joining us.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
So why did you and your fellow group members want to start the Political Science Student Association?
So essentially, the Political Science Department wanted to get some sort of organization that was like a professional development organization, because our department didn't really have anything like that, where lots of other departments do. So the department was really like the founder, they got everything moving on off the ground because they started the peer mentor program and the peer mentors led it. But then ultimately they set up this meeting and they had, anybody who was interested come and then you run for your positions. And that's how it all started.
So one of the big conversations happening on campuses right now is what feels like students at loggerheads, maybe not agreeing on certain political issues, maybe not even engaging with people who have differing viewpoints. One of the goals, it seems, of your organization is that you are trying to at least bridge that gap somewhat. How successful has that been so far?
I definitely would deem a lot of the things we've done a success. The biggest success, I think the first step we had in getting really recognized would be last semester we hosted a gun control debate. And obviously that's always a hot topic, mm-hmm. especially that was very soon after the Parkland shooting. Mm-hmm. And we had students from, Young Americans for Freedom, Young Americans for Liberty, College Democrats, College Republicans, and even the International Socialists. So we really tried to get a really diverse group of people because so many people are always like, oh, it's always the, the Democrats and the Republicans. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more than that on our campus. So we brought them all together for a panel and I had to moderate it. It did get a little heated, but all together, it was really a good time. And at the end, some of the libertarians started agreeing with the socialists, and I was just blown away by that.
Yeah, so it's really interesting that that's kind of the case study that you and your organization and your fellow members have, is something that's really a very hot button issue. Did you find, from that or even other political conversations that there is common ground between you and your fellow students?
Oh, there definitely is. It's just always a surprise to people. People never realize, oh, wait, you feel the same way I do about that. So I really think it's about, of course, bridging that divide and starting dialogue on these conversations. And luckily, we've been a really great platform for that because lots of other students try to start these conversations in areas where it can be deemed, a little harder to have these conversations, like through ASM, our student organization, our student government. And nothing really plays out there. It's not really anything that's going to bridge anything, that's going to start conversations. It's usually just like, here's one side, here's the other, that's it. But there's more than just two sides too. Like I said, there's so many, like those third party groups that I mentioned, they never get any coverage on campus. They were so thankful that we reached out to them and wanted to hear their opinions.
What do you think some of the long-term goals of your organization will be?
Essentially, we're supposed to be a professional development group altogether, which we definitely are. We have lots of networking events all the time with really notable alumni who come from all sides of the aisle, which is, again, something so cool that we get to have. Is, we have somebody who started working in oil, for like ExxonMobil. And then now he's part of the Ocean Conservation Group and he's an alumni. And he talked about his transition and how, something like that changes. But that's, that happens so often for so many different people. So for the future of our group, I really see more of a place for dialogue and more of an open forum and an invite to people that aren't just political science majors.
Well, Anna, we'll have to leave it there for right now, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, I'm so happy to be here.
Anna Berry is a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the president of the Political Science Student Association. She joined us to talk about how she and her fellow students are looking to bridge the political divide in order to have more productive political conversations.
Now, our next guest has dedicated much of his life to finding ways for people of opposing viewpoints to have honest and open conversations with the goal of finding common ground.
Justin Lee is the author of Talking Across the Divide, How to Communicate with People You Disagree With, and Maybe Even Change the World. Justin, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So this is not the first book you've written where you talk about, bridging these divides. How did you get to this being a passion of yours?
Well, I grew up in a conservative Southern Baptist home and had a lot of views about cultural issues and political issues and all of that in that context. And one of the issues that I cared about was homosexuality. I believed that being gay was a sin and a choice, and it was an issue I was fairly outspoken about. And then as I got older, I came to realize that I was gay, which sort of threw everything, turned everything upside down for me in my life. And as I started sharing my story, I found that there were a lot of other folks on that particular issue who were really struggling, folks who were gay or LGBTQ Christians, folks who were Christians who had a conservative view but had good friends or family members who were gay or LGBTQ, folks on all sides who just felt like we could have this conversation in a better way. And so I've spent the last 20 years of my life having conversations with folks on all sides of that conversation. And I wrote a book called Torn, Rescuing the Gospel from the Gays versus Christians Debate about that subject. But as I've been having that conversation more and more, I've discovered that my friends on all sides of that topic are also on different sides of a lot of other issues. And I've become really interested in how polarized we are as a country and how do we move forward without letting that polarization tear us apart.
Yeah, there have been a lot of conversations about political polarization in the United States. It's not anything new, but it feels as though it has become, more concrete, more solidified in the past few years. And there are plenty of reasons why we might have gotten to this spot, but you've written a little bit about what you think might be at issue. You know, what are you seeing as some of the things that are exacerbating political polarization?
Well, I think one of the things is the growth of the internet and how much time we spend on the internet and on social media, and particularly getting our news there. One of the things, there have been other books written about this, most notably a book called The Filter Bubble a few years ago. One of the things that's happened is that sites like Facebook are designed with algorithms that tell us what we want to hear so that they will keep us there. So when I go on Facebook, if I have friends on the left and on the right, and most of us tend to have friends on Facebook who are most like ourselves, but say if I have friends who are a broad cross-section of the American populace, if I tend to click on the articles that my friends post on the right and don't click on the articles that lean left, I'm going to see more and more of those articles that lean right. That's what Facebook's going to show me. And if I never click on the articles that lean right, then Facebook's going to stop showing them to me. And so gradually what happens is these computer algorithms on Facebook, on Google, and everywhere else we go online start to show us more and more of the content that we already like. And we get into these bubbles where we're only talking to the people who think like us and only seeing information that reflects back to us what we already believe. And so gradually the other side of whatever issue seems to make less and less sense to us as time goes on, to the point that we're not even operating in the same reality. We're not hearing the same facts. We're not hearing the same positions. And so we just don't understand each other and we don't know how to talk to each other.
Yeah, it sort of seems as though people become one-dimensional when we get to these disagreements, and it makes it sometimes easier to either demonize people we disagree with or completely write them off. Do you think that that has been made easier because of the internet, that we can simply shut people out?
Absolutely. So if you and I communicate primarily on Facebook and we disagree strongly on an issue that I care about, it's really easy for me to just block you and all of a sudden you're gone and I don't have to listen to you anymore and I don't have to consider your position anymore. And I do think there are times in our lives where someone is just toxic and you have to take time away from them or maybe even cut them out of your life altogether. But it's gotten so easy for us to do that all the time, anytime somebody challenges us, that we do get more and more into these bubbles of like-minded folks from around the world. And, you know, there's not... When I can easily communicate with people all over the world who agree with me, there's not as much incentive for me to try to work things out with my local friends and family members who disagree with me, because I can always find somebody else who will be my new Facebook friend. So I do think that's a real problem. And it's something that we've got to fight, as hard as that may be, because if we continue down this trajectory, we're really in trouble as a nation.
We're talking to Justin Lee right now. He is the author of Talking Across the Divide, How to Communicate with People You Disagree With, and Maybe Even Change the World. So, you know, the crux of this whole conversation is that there are people that you do not agree with, but you know that there is a place for dialogue. So just at the beginning, how do you get the ball rolling when, you know, some people simply don't want to engage?
There are several reasons. I talk about five barriers in my book that are usually the reason that's underlying why somebody doesn't want to talk to you or doesn't seem to listen. But one of the first things that you can do that will knock down, at least make progress on knocking down some of those barriers, is something that we very rarely do because it feels a bit counterintuitive, and that is to listen. We often think that the best weapon that we have to get someone to see our point of view is our ability to argue. But arguments very rarely change minds in a one-on-one kind of context. When you just argue with each other, just debate with each other, it tends to cause people to dig in their heels more. Whereas when you listen to somebody, even if you don't feel that it's fair, even if you feel that they should be listening to you by all rights, and perhaps they should, when you listen to them, it helps calm them down. If you can reflect back to them what you've heard from them and help them see that you do understand their side of things, that helps to put them in a position of being ready to listen to you. But also, as you listen, you learn more about what's their real motivation. What's the motivation behind the motivation? What is it that really is important to them about whatever this issue is that you're discussing? And that's something you can use then to advance the conversation.
Justin, I want to get back to listening in just a second, but I want to remind our listeners that we're talking to Justin Lee right now. He's the author of Talking Across the Divide, How to Communicate with People You Disagree With, and Maybe Even Change the World. And he's with us to talk about how we can have difficult political conversations with people we disagree with and how we can make those seemingly fraught interactions more productive.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of political polarization? Is it new or has it been around for as long as politics have? How do you have conversations about politics with friends or family, or do you avoid the conversations altogether? And do you think it's possible to disagree about politics but have a meaningful conversation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
And we'll continue this conversation after a quick break here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we continue our conversation about why having conversations with people you disagree with can be so difficult, but why, in an age of polarization, having these conversations is more important than ever. Our guest is Justin Lee. He's the author of Talking Across the Divide, How to Communicate with People You Disagree With, and Maybe Even Change the World.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How do you think people should be talking about politics? Do you find political conversations to be stressful? And if so, how do you approach them? Or maybe you even avoid them. And do you think that there is a way to reduce political polarization? You can call in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Justin, before we went to that break, we were talking about the importance of listening. And I know that that's pretty central to your argument here. How do you recommend, given that I think we are an argumentative people at times, to be a more engaged listener?
Well, one of the things I think that you can always listen for is how would the person you're talking to tell the story of their own position, their own involvement with whatever the issue is that you're discussing. Very often we go into these conversations assuming that the other person is either an idiot or a villain. But the reality is nobody or almost nobody goes through life seeing themselves as an idiot or a villain. And so even if you think that the other person's position is villainous in some way, they aren't going through life going, I am evil and I'm going to do all the evil things, you know. And so what we have to do is listen well enough that we can share back to this person the story as they would tell it with them as the protagonist. Because if you can do that, even if you think that they're not the protagonist, if you can tell the story back to them in a way that paints them in a positive light, then they feel heard and they feel understood. And then they're ready to hear you tell a different story, which is the story of your own involvement with the issue and why you care about it and hope that they'll change their mind.
I want to go to our callers really quickly. We have Richard in Madison. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Here is my view on this. Now, I've been watching the postmodern era, also known as the era of subjectivity, emerge since the mid-80s. And in the 90s, I watched our society become increasingly polarized, especially as we went through the 90s. So what we're talking about now is nothing new. It's just become quite extreme. So I have seen not only a correlation of subjective thought and polarization, but I believe it's cause and effect. I do not believe that this polarization is caused by the echo chamber of peer groups, the internet, Google, whatever, but that is the effect.
Richard, thank you so much for that call. So Richard is saying that, you know, there was this emergence of a more subjective conversation versus facts. When you've been working with this, have you found that there might be a balance between those, you know, the anecdotes from people where you are, you know, relating to people a little bit more and when you can bring out some facts?
Yeah, I think that facts are important. Some things are true and some things aren't. And one of the pushbacks I often get from folks when I talk about the importance of listening and the importance of dialogue is people think that I'm saying, oh, nobody's right. Everybody's got a right to their own opinion. And, you know, who's to say who's right? Well, I don't think that's true. I think there are rights and wrongs. I think there are facts and then there are, you know, false facts. But I, because of the world that we live in, which sometimes people do view things in a very subjective way, it's important to understand what someone believes to be true, even if they're wrong. Because if somebody's not operating with the facts, then they're seeing the world from a completely different perspective. They think that the options are different or the situation is different than it actually is. And that's important for you to know if you're going to have any hope of getting through to them.
I want to go back to our callers. We have Jenny in Milwaukee. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I was just very intrigued by the show today, and I am a practitioner and a trainer in the deliberative dialogue practices, and we're currently working with high school students in Milwaukee discussing what it is about their community that concerns them, and then drawing parallels of like how to solve these wicked problems that the adults aren't solving. Mm-hmm. And we found with adults and the youth that it's like so important for us to just try to get on the same page about the types of things that are concerning them or the adults, so we can see where there's commonalities and places where they can work together towards a solution. And we found over the course of doing this that students just like they're craving to have a real conversation. The adults are craving to have a real conversation where we're really looking at issues from multiple sides and looking for those places of understanding.
And Jenny, thank you for that call. You know, Justin, what do you have to say to that?
Well, I think that it's this kind of dialogue is so valuable. And I think that any way that people can have it, whether it's in a group setting, one-on-one, the more of these kinds of dialogues that we can have, the better off we are. In my book, Talking Across the Divide, I talk about some of the dialogues that I've helped to host on the subject of sexuality and faith, since that's my background, and how people often who you don't expect to see eye to eye end up coming to not necessarily agree with each other, but coming to a lot more common ground than you'd think just by sharing their stories, listening to each other, and asking good questions.
Now, we don't have a ton of time left, but part of when we do engage in dialogue, sometimes people view it as an argument and that it's a zero-sum game that they need to win in order to prove their point. But, you don't necessarily take that stance, but how do you, in your practice, challenge people and help them break out of that mindset?
Well, ultimately, I think what we all need is to know what is true and to be able to find ways to move forward in a way that's beneficial to all of us. Very often we're operating based on different sets of information, different facts, different understandings of the world. And as we talk to each other and listen to each other, we can at least get closer together and at least understand what's motivating one another, which does enable us to find solutions that are mutually beneficial, even if we don't continue, even if we continue to disagree. But often agreement can come out of these conversations, given time and given people's willingness to put their egos aside and listen. And, ultimately, if we can go forward in a way that at least we're having better conversations, I think that's better for us as a society.
Well, Justin, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And your listeners can follow up with me on these conversations on my website at geekyjustin.com, GEEKY Justin.com. Thanks so much.
Justin Lee is the author of Talking Across the Divide, How to Communicate with People You Disagree With and Maybe Even Change the World. This is Central Time.